Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast. I'm your host, Roman Perry. On this episode, we have Joey Papatsis. We get into the ins and outs of artist management, especially on the business side of things, the types of resources that a major label deal can offer, and how his law degree has paid off in his music career.
Industry Talks.
Joey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Roman?
Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Do you want to take a minute to introduce yourself and tell the people what you do?
Sure. So my name is Joey Papatsis. I'm an artist manager, originally from Chicago, Illinois. Right now, I currently manage Louis the Child, Wheat Thin, Win and Woo, and Yeah, Me Too.
Cool.
I've been managing artists for 5 years, and I love what I do.
Great. So you went to Syracuse?
I did. I'm an Orangeman.
Did you do the band year program there?
I was in a music industry program there,
okay.
The band year program, and I really appreciated my time at Syracuse. I'm still active with the alumni network. I had a few different internships, and you know, I loved all the internships I was able to do. I interned at Sony ATV and for a recording studio in Chicago, and I also interned at a law firm, Mitchell, Silverberg & Knupp, where I did entertainment law. But it was just as important to figure out what I didn't want to do as what I was interested in.
Yeah, definitely. And
I started managing my first band, Louis the Child, when I was a senior at Syracuse, and continued to manage them. After college, I took a year off in between undergrad and law school. I worked actually at a commercial real estate investment group. So I was doing nothing related to music for a year, but still managing Louis the Child along the way.
Yeah.
Applied to law school, got accepted to a few different schools, chose to go to school in Chicago because I wanted to stay close to the music scene and stay close to Louis the Child.
Yeah.
Kept managing them. And then about halfway through law school, you know, Louis the Child had gotten booked for Coachella, Lollapalooza, a lot of big festivals. I was like, oh, well, this feels like it could be a career for me. I said I was, you know, I'm going to finish school. I'm going to keep up with classes, sit for finals, but all in on artist management.
Yeah.
So instead of, it's common for law students to take a summer and work at a law firm, right? And do internships there.
Yeah.
It's a big part of the law school experience. And I skipped that to go to music festivals all around the country.
Doesn't sound so bad.
With Louis the Child.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I definitely had more fun than my colleagues in law school, but, you know, that was kind of my all in moment, right? Of just skipping, you know, law school work experience to pursue artist management full time.
Do you think, where'd you go to law school?
I went to law school at Chicago Kent.
Okay, cool.
In the city of Chicago.
That's great.
Really enjoyed my time there. They had a great intellectual property program.
Okay. Is that what you were in?
Yeah, that was what I was in. I was taking entertainment law classes and trying to take as many intellectual property law classes as I can.
Yeah.
Whether that's copyright law or trademarks.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
This definitely helped you in your management.
Oh, every day. Yeah. Because I just stare at contracts all day and negotiate them. And
yeah.
I mean, all my clients have great entertainment lawyers that I work with. There's no substitute for having decades of experience in the music industry, like a lot of the entertainment lawyers I work with have. But it's nice not to have to have every little piece of a contract explained to you and kind of having a grasp on it yourself.
Yeah, and I'm sure like some of the more, not I don't want to say a mundane contract, but some of the stuff that's like just day-to-day that you don't really need to worry about too much. You'd be like, okay, this looks good.
We're good.
We don't need to call anybody about this.
Sure. Like on very basic agreements, you know, template stuff, it's nice not having to pick up the phone every single
time.
What
does this mean? What does this
mean? A contract hits your desk because
you
know, I get tons of contracts that hit my desk every day.
Definitely. So. How did you meet Louis the Child? Is it Louis the Child or Louis the Child?
It's Louis the Child,
okay, but Louis the Child.
You know, you can call him Louis the Child.
Okay.
I think we're okay with that. We don't really correct people when people say
Louis the Child. Well, I mean, as the podcast host, I feel like I should get it right.
Sure, Louis the Child.
Louis the Child.
So my younger brother was in school with these guys, Freddie and Robbie, and we're all from the same part of Chicago.
Okay.
We all graduated from the same high school. My younger brother was classmates with Freddie.
Yeah.
And he was the guy who sent me their demos very early on. And was like, you know, I think the first two times he sent them, I didn't check them out or whatever. And then the third time, I did, and I really dug the music, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of raw talent here. But it was completely like ground zero, 100 fans on Facebook, like right. very few plays on SoundCloud, very, you know, little music out.
Yeah.
I just picked up the phone. I'm like, hey, I've been in this music industry program at Syracuse for a few years. I've had these internships. I would like to be your manager. Yeah. Like, yeah, sure. And that's where it started.
It seems like you kind of hopped on managing them pretty early in their career. Like they were, like you said, they were.
Yeah, Freddie, zero. I think Freddie was 15 when I started managing him.
Wow.
So, and Robbie was 16. I remember that Freddie like didn't have a driver's license when I started working with them.
That's nuts.
So, yeah, it's been a great, you know,
yeah,
five year run now.
How this is kind of leads me to this question: how do you know? Because you also have a few other acts that you manage.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know when an act is ready to have a manager?
You know, that's a tough question to answer. I think, you know. For me, I kind of found all my acts. You know, I approached them and
right.
said, hey, I want to do this.
Yeah.
So that definitely helps, having a manager who's interested and passionate about it, as yeah. opposed to trying to like talking someone into doing it.
Yeah.
But it for me, I think an act can have a manager at any point in their career, whether right. they're square 100 fans on Facebook or whether they're a huge touring successful artist. It's a critical part of the team, and I think the most important part of the manager is to build the team around the artist, right? So to
right.
find the booking agent, find the record label, find the publicist, the entertainment attorney, like building all those pieces.
Yeah, because you're kind of like, I guess you're the, like, I don't know if you are like the quarterback or the coach. Do you know what I mean?
I always say the manager is like the point guard on the basketball team.
Okay.
So we are responsible for, you know, you're like the nucleus and you're responsible for making sure all the different parts of the team are
yeah.
talking and working together and holding everyone accountable and keeping everyone honest,
yeah.
et cetera. But, you know, I mean, to go back to your question, when's the right time? I don't think it's ever too early, but it's got to be a good fit. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's so much work for both the manager and the band that when I got into artist management, I knew very little about what an artist manager actually did. I just jumped into the deep end and tried to figure it out, and that yeah. I think is the best way to yeah. learn artist management.
I think it's the best way to do a lot of things,
sure,
you know.
And 5 years later, I'm a way better manager
yeah,
than
sure.
I was when I was 21 years old. But I don't think there's ever a right or wrong time. But I think if you don't have a manager yet, I think for me, I always want to see, if I'm going to work with a band, I want to see that they have the same hustle and drive that I do, that it's not just going to be a one-sided, this guy, you know, my manager's right. my personal assistant kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't look at it like that. It needs to be a two-way street. And yeah. I think the best way for an unsigned act to, you know, find a manager is to make them come to you. You know what I mean? Like try to do PR around your own records
yeah.
to build your brand yourself, you know, build your brand equity, right? So that managers will want to manage you. You know right. what I mean? Like the music industry is weird. I always say people are like moths to a flame. You know what I mean? Once something has buzz, everyone swarms in.
Definitely.
Wants to act like they found it first. So yeah. just try to build your own buzz. You yeah. know, that's the best way to be paired up. And then hopefully if you build that buzz on your own, you'll have the pick of 10 managers and
yeah.
you can find who's the best fit.
Definitely. If I feel like that applies to your entire team. It's like if you build it, they will come. That's like
absolutely.
If you focus on your own craft and your own, like just being a better musician and your own brand, like of course people want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
When did you find out that you wanted to be a manager? Like when did that happen?
You know, originally I thought that it might be something that would, if nothing else, be a great line on the resume to say that I've done this. You know
right.
what I mean? But I would say it was, I didn't realize it until I was a second semester senior at college and I was like, originally, oh, I want to do music publishing. I'm like, oh, now I want to be an entertainment lawyer.
Yeah.
I started managing Lewis Child, and I was like, you know, this really seems like good. This seems like the best fit.
Yeah.
The most interesting for me.
Yeah.
So, I would say it was when I started managing Lewis Child and I started to see that it could lead to being a career. I mean, my goals getting to music, it was always how do I pay my rent doing this?
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a really tough puzzle to figure out, especially if you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
How do I pay the bills doing what I want to do?
Yeah, exactly.
It was when I started managing Lewis Child. I probably didn't see myself as a manager until I started working with them.
Yeah. What made you want to get into music?
I played in bands in high school.
Okay.
I was a bass player
in
a ska band. And I always took it upon myself to be the manager, quote unquote, of the band. I was like figuring out how to record our CD or get us to open at whatever local show or coordinate. We'd play house parties and I'd kind of do all the logistics and round everyone up.
Sorted out.
Exactly. So I always kind of had the, you know, I was the entrepreneur of the band and that, you know, led me to be very interested in a career in the music industry. My parents were supportive of it and said, why don't you go to school for this? I said, okay, sounds cool. Syracuse had a great program, but I think you can go to college anywhere and, or not go to college. I mean, I know tons of successful industry professionals who didn't go to college or dropped out of college.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, one size fits all approach.
No, I don't think so either. What's the thing working with Lewis the Child that you're the most proud of?
You know, I would say definitely a highlight working with them was when we played Lollapalooza in the 2016 Lollapalooza set at the Grove. Mm-hmm. That was just a festival that I grew up going to, and that was kind of like the Chicago made it moment when you had a huge crowd at Lollapalooza. So that was a highlight. On a lot of the records we've put out, those have been highlights. But now it's just, you know, I'm not satisfied until we have a platinum record, you know, chasing Billboard success.
Then it's five platinums.
Yeah, exactly. It's a never ending hustle.
Another Grammy.
Exactly.
And then another Grammy. Yeah. And then an Oscar for a best rituals.
You know, you can always keep going. Yeah,
you can always keep going. What do you think is your biggest challenge day to day?
I think I would say it's the balance of, you know, making sure you're keeping up with all the communication,
right?
The day in, day out, responding to everyone, balancing that with also getting projects completed, right? So I try to segment my days into, I'll just only respond to emails for this hour, and then for another hour I'm not going to respond to any emails.
Right.
I'm only going to like work on this task to check this thing off, whether it's like some, you know, admin project or what it is. But finding that balance of, you know, I have a lot of great mentors in the business, and I was having dinner with an agent I look up to and respect, and you know, we were talking about just how do you deal with such a high volume of communication, because as much as I have a crowded inbox, you know, the agents are dealing with like 10 times as many emails as I do.
Right.
I'm like, how do you possibly, you know, how do you deal with this? How do you get anything done?
Yeah.
And they just, you know, he talked about how he blocks his days off into, you know, I'll respond to emails for an hour and then I'll accomplish this task for an hour. So just balancing that and making sure not always, because he's like, if I just played email defense all day, I'd never get anything done.
Yeah.
So
you got to time box it out for that kind of stuff. Like do your
and then
1 hour, 2 hour of your email.
Always working towards inbox zero has been a big thing for me, making sure I, you know, respond to reply or folder every single thing that hits my inbox. I'm addicted to Gmail 100%.
Okay. That's like your main. Yeah. Do you think that's your favorite tool?
I would say, Gmail. Can't live without Gmail.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, Gmail.
Gmail for work. Highly recommend it to all the aspiring music industry professionals listening.
Yeah. So Gmail is definitely your favorite tool.
Yeah.
What's some of the other ones that make your life a lot easier?
I would say someone on our tour team got us into Slack.
Okay.
Slack is a really nice, you know, internal team.
Yeah.
It's nice to not like flood your inbox just talking internally as a team.
Yeah.
So that one's great. I don't know. Microsoft Office Suite is awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Definitely very good. So if you had, so say if, you know, somebody who's a young kid listening to this podcast and they have aspirations of being a manager, what's some advice that you would give to somebody? Maybe some things that you've learned along the way that you'd wish you'd learned.
So 5 years ago. I would say to any young, aspiring managers out there, the first thing I would do is go to Amazon and buy this book, Everything You Need to Know About the Music Business by Donald Passman.
Yeah.
I think that's like the best. They use that book to teach a lot of music industry classes, and I think it's the best just overview of the music industry, which being a manager is, I think, one of the more, it's a very dynamic job because you have to know about the promoting business,
right?
Concert business, right? The touring business.
You have to wear a ton of hats.
You have to know about the legal side and the publishing side and the master recording side. So this book, Everything You Need to Know About the Music Business, is a great overview of that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like my Bible as a young manager.
All right.
Still is. Keep it by my desk.
Yeah.
That's a great book. I would say first, you know, do your due diligence, read through that, kind of understand all the different responsibilities that a manager has. Mm-hmm. And then after that, go out and find a band, start managing them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always thought the best way to do something is just go do it. And I don't, you know, I think that I know so many like superstar successful young managers that understand streaming and social media, you know, better than a lot of the older managers. Right. So I think that's the best way into it. Go find a band and start managing them.
Yeah. Cause I feel like too, some of the older managers as well, like they have the system that they've set up. You know what I mean? So like, I feel like when you're coming up, you're kind of just open to anything and you're open to like, so you're actually in a pretty good position, I think, to be in because you have all the options.
There's, you know, there's guys like Pat Corcoran who are changing the, you know, landscape of the music industry by not signing Chance the Rapper to a record label. Right. I mean, and there's so many, the great thing about, you know, the streaming world and the internet age of the music industry is that you can find a band, put on the internet and reach a million people tomorrow. Right.
Right.
And anyone can do that. You don't have to be a major record label to go reach a million people on SoundCloud.
You just have to be good. You have to have a good brand. You have to have
good music. Good music. At the end of the day, that's what I've looked for in every single client I work with is the music great?
Yeah.
That's the number one question.
Who do you think is one of your heroes?
That's a great question. Definitely my dad for sure. Uh-huh. He's an entrepreneur. He's always worked for himself. Hard worker. You know, he's a Greek American immigrant, so he came to this country when he was young. Worked really hard to build what he has, and he's definitely a hero. Terms of, you know, music heroes. There's my first boss at my entertainment law internship, Eric German, for sure.
Yeah.
He was a music attorney that, you know, mentored me along the way and has given me a lot of great advice. Martin Bandier, you know, he endowed the program that has given me so much in terms of a network and all that. You know, there's a lot of music industry heroes. Chance the Rapper's music industry hero. All my clients I work with are music industry heroes.
Yeah, there you go. If you, maybe to narrow it down, if you could work with anybody for a year, maybe as their assistant or even as a, like a, have like a mentorship, like, you know, it's like a, have them as your mentor for a whole year and they're, you know, one-on-one.
In the music industry?
In the music industry, somebody that you could basically like sit down with for 2 hours a week and check in with, and he can, he or she could give you advice?
I could think about that. Maybe Scooter Braun.
Yeah.
On the management side, for sure.
Yeah, he's a champ.
You know, he's a legend. It's incredible. Not only, you know, on all the artist careers he's built, but philanthropy is such a big, you know, part of what he does, and that's really inspiring. So
definitely.
Yeah, I would probably go work for Scooter for a year.
I mean,
he has it figured out.
I'm not even in management, and I would probably pick Scooter Braun as well. He's definitely like, it's always like Scooter Braun, Jimmy Iovine, and then like Danger Mouse is another dude, because I'm more of a producer, you know, an artist and stuff. So like Danger Mouse is like one of my favorites. So like, so this is kind of a question, that has been kind of bugging me a little bit. So at what point, as far as responsibilities go, can you explain the difference between an agent and a manager? Like, what is an agent responsible for? And then what is a manager responsible for?
Yeah.
Maybe in the context of like booking a tour.
Sure. I mean, you know, agents typically have a lot more clients than a manager does.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's by design, because a manager is involved in like every single aspect of an artist's career.
Right.
And the agent is just focused on, soliciting gigs and booking shows.
Right.
So, the agent, you know, in the context of like booking a tour, the agent would be the guy who's pitching. In Lewis Child's early days, for example, our agent was constantly pitching us to support bigger bands. So Lewis Child supported the Chainsmokers, Madion, Cascade, Big Gigantic. But, you know, so the agent would pitch us to go open for these guys, pitch us for different music festivals. And then once the promoter says, yeah, sure, let's do it. I mean, in the context of support, usually it's the other band's agent who you tour with who approves it. But let's say you're pitching for a music festival. The promoter will say, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then they negotiate a price, like they negotiate a contract. So the manager's removed from that part of it. Actually, in the state of California, there's like a labor law that says like a manager, if you're advising on the management side, you can't book the band for a gig.
Yeah, I've never understood that.
I don't know how enforced it is.
Yeah,
in Illinois, like, you know, Chicago, there's no such law. If you're a manager, you can book your band all the gigs under the sun. But it is part of California labor law, and you know, the manager will then, once the agent brings a show or a tour, right, like we're getting, you know, we're discussing Lewis Child's fall tour right now, so the agent will then take the contract, send it to the manager and say yes or no, you know what I mean, does this look good, is the band available, etc. And then myself as a manager, I go to the band, I usually kind of spin it. I think we should do this. I think we shouldn't do this.
Right.
What do you guys think? If they go thumbs up, go back to the agent, lock it in.
Yeah.
And he binds the contract with the venue.
Okay. Cool. Because it's definitely too, like, the whole, because like, I heard it was illegal to have your manager act as your agent. And that's just
in California.
It just never made sense.
In California. But.
Because, like, say if you haven't, if you're not at the level that, where you can have an agent, like you have agents interested in you, like what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Maybe it's, I think more than anything, maybe preventing the talent agencies from becoming managers, right?
Yeah.
Than from the manager of a small band becoming their agent also.
Yeah.
So.
And then it's kind of important too to have that separation of power in some ways.
Yeah, there can be a conflict of interest for sure.
Yeah.
If you're the guy who offers the band the show and says yes to the show.
Yeah.
Maybe the band's playing too many shows.
Yeah. What's the normal percentage for an agent? Like, what does that look like?
An agent, industry standard is usually 10% of the gross on a show.
Okay.
So that's kind of like a common industry, you know, percentage. And it's all explained and all you need to know about the music business by Donald Passman. But that's a typical agent cut.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the gross is before expenses, right?
Before expenses.
Before expenses. And then the net would be after.
Yes.
Okay. just make sure we get all the terms, get all the terms right. This is so I don't have to read the book. This is me getting all the information from you because I know you very much. What's a typical percentage? And then like too, I'm not trying to get too personal with your own business and stuff like that. What is a typical percentage for a manager?
Sure. I mean, I'll dive into it. I'm not going to talk about, specific deals I have with clients because,
I mean, it's confidentiality just, and stuff.
Yeah.
And
this is going on the internet. You know, so, but I will say, you know, basically talk about anything you'd find in a music industry book.
Yeah.
You know, a typical percentage is anywhere from usually 15 to 20% for managers. And that can be very different whether you commission on the gross or the net, right? So if the band, you know, gets paid $100 and you're taking 20% of the gross and you take $20 when the 100 comes in. But if you're commissioning on the net, the band makes $100, but it took them $80 to play the show.
Right.
Then you would only be commissioning the $20 left over.
Yeah.
So you'd get a $4 commission instead of a $20 commission.
So maybe if it would be a higher percentage if it was the net and then a smaller percentage if it was the gross. Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's usually pretty common. And everyone's situation is different.
Right.
You know what I mean? What might be fair for a 7-piece rock band is different than a solo DJ.
A solo DJ.
So.
And is that percentage like across the board for like every dollar that the band or artist makes, or is that percentage
usually depending? The manager's commission, you know, all entertainment income is pretty standard.
Okay.
That's just because we work to build all the entertainment income. You know, we build the publishing income, we build the recording income, we build the touring income. And, you know, while we don't necessarily confirm the gig, the agent books the show, we're the guys who logistically make it happen and make sure the band gets the you know.
But you're also too, you're helping to build the brand outside of the show.
Sure.
And then it's sort of like the intangible thing that, you know, if you've been focusing on.
So typical, you know, music industry, right? Like the lawyer gets a percentage.
Yeah.
Or gets paid hourly, whatever you negotiate.
Yeah.
The agent gets a percentage that standard is usually higher than, you know, the lawyer percentages.
Right.
Usually 5%. And then the manager gets the highest percentage out of all those, but that's also because the manager is usually spending the
most time.
The most time.
Yeah.
And while an entertainment lawyer, a booking agent might be able to have 40 or 50 clients, you usually don't see that with one individual manager.
Yeah. So what's a normal amount of artists to be responsible for as a manager?
I don't think there's one answer to that. You know what I mean? I think depends where your artists are at in their careers and how much time you have. And, you know, I've seen people who have a few artists and then one thing starts to take off. And so they clean stuff off their plate, to focus on that one thing. And then I've seen other people who have one artist take off and then they use that to work with more people. So
this also kind of goes into the next question, which is, what's the difference between, like, you have some people have like a manager and then they have like a day-to-day manager, and I'm wondering like what's the division of labor there?
Sure.
Like,
so in the Kiel office, my management company, we have two managers, senior managers, partners of the company, myself and Peter Rugo, and then we each have a day-to-day manager who works on the clients we represent. So my day-to-day manager is Matt Carlucci. He's been working with me for probably a year or two now, 2 years, I think. And Peter works with Mike.
Okay.
Erlish. And so, you know, it varies from situation to situation, but in, you know, I can only really speak to my current company because I, you know, Matt and I had founded a management company in law school called Prospect Artists, and Matt and I were working over there, and I'm doing Kiel. And day-to-day, I would say, for us, is the day-to-day is focused on, you know, anything from, like, logistics and scheduling to social media posts and all those things, you know, just making that stuff move. And then whereas I try to stay focused on, you know, the bigger calendar, upcoming releases, making sure the deals get closed that need to get closed. making sure things are happening on time and kind of making sure also I would say, you know, maybe the day to day is more like inward focused on what's happening on the band's, you know, daily agenda, whereas I might be more focused on what's the record label doing, what's the booking agent doing, what's the entertainment lawyer doing, and making sure all those pieces are gelling together.
Right. So maybe would you say that like the day to day is focused on sort of the daily and the weekly goals, and then maybe like sort of the overall
monthly. And
what is the name? Sure. So you have a day to day manager. Is there a name for the for like? So you have your day to day guy. Are you just the manager, and then there's the day to day manager?
Yeah, sure.
Are you like the grand manager or something?
Yeah, I'm just the manager.
Okay.
And then we have day to day manager, tour manager, production manager.
Yeah,
it's a lot of managers on the team.
It's too many managers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the day to day manager is more your daily and your weekly goals, and then the manager is more sort of
I'm still very much involved in the day to day stuff too.
Yeah.
We're on the same page. We work towards common goals, and but it helps tremendously to have someone who's just as focused as you are on your clients and making sure stuff happens.
Yeah, definitely. So you're kind of mainly in the electronic music scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where your artists are at.
Currently. Yes.
So what would you do if you wanted to break into another genre like, hip hop or rock and roll or something like that? Like, what would you do? Like, what would be your first steps, like moving in, or even like country or something? Like,
sure. Just like, I mean, my first step would be to find said hip hop or rock and roll act that I really love and that I believe in and that I think has huge potential, and then start managing them and, you know, pitch them, because I think the lessons you learn from managing a band, whether it's an electronic band or a rock and roll band or a hip hop band, they're applicable to all genres. I mean, the music industry is the music industry. Record deal
looks the same.
There's all the same terms and different elements to it, regardless of what genre you're in. So I would just try to pitch why I think I'm qualified and a great fit, and I'm going to work hard to, make your career successful.
Okay. As an entrepreneur and working for yourself and having your own company, how do you stay motivated?
I mean, it's easy to stay motivated. I work in the music business. I love what I do. It's great. It's awesome to be surrounded, whereas earlier in my career, I was a one man show.
Yeah.
I was completely independent, solo operation, but having a few guys in the office, grinding it out with you. I mean, we spend a lot of nights in the office till 8, 9 PM just getting it done, and then showing up, bright and early.
Yeah, definitely.
a few hours later.
The ritual helps with it. You know what I mean? Coming in the morning and stuff.
It's a work-life balance, what I mean? You have to find that and make sure you're still healthy and taking care of yourself, not drinking too much coffee.
Yeah.
But just waking up early and being surrounded by hardworking people is easy to stay motivated.
What about when you were a one-man show?
I mean, I was just nonstop marching towards a goal of making my clients as big as I possibly could.
Right.
I'd say for me it was, I don't want to say easier, but I had law school going on at the same time for a lot of my, I spent 3 years in law school while I was managing bands. That was like the biggest challenge, was balancing, trying to keep up with law school reading assignments and making sure you keep up with all your music industry emails at the same time. Those were definitely the dark days of lots of caffeine and late nights in the library. You really have to love what you do, because you spend so many hours. It's a nonstop. I mean, there's issues and things that come up at 9 p.m.
Yeah,
that we're constantly dealing with as managers.
Yeah.
So if you don't like your job, it's tougher to work 12 hours a day.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of a prerequisite a little bit.
Yeah.
That question's always interesting to ask, because I ask that question to artists and ask that question to managers, and just that I think managers are a lot, you guys have, like you said, you have a whole crew of people that you're working with that are kind of like, you have your artists that are kind of relying on you, and you have the people that you work with that are relying on you. And that kind of makes it a lot easier to motivate yourself rather than, I think as an artist, like being self-motivated can be a difficult thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's easier once I would say you have some momentum and you feel like things are happening. There's success on the horizon.
Yeah.
To keep charging for, you know, towards that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize with Lewis the Child, there were people like, oh, overnight success. I'm like, you know, we were putting out free remix on the internet for like years, not making any money before things started to happen.
Right.
And so those are the tougher days when there's no money coming in and you're constantly putting in hours and hours of work.
Right. You're spinning your pro bono almost.
Yeah. So, but
it feels like
for us, it was, we would just, the internet's so cool in that we would try to build one release off the next one and get a certain amount of like blog pickup and exposure on one release and then use that momentum into the next one and just keep putting out content. That's the biggest advice I have to people out there is constant content is the best way to grow a brand in 2018.
Okay. So is that just constant like music content or just
everything?
Everything.
You know, constant social media content.
Yeah.
Constant music content. I see a lot of young bands and artist projects make the mistake of releasing like a body of work, whether it's an EP or an album,
right,
before they have a fan base for a single.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't get a bunch of people to listen to your music for 3 minutes, it's going to be a lot harder to get them to listen to your music for 30 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, just start putting out singles, trying to build a fan base. And then once you feel like you have demand for a larger body of work, then, you know,
and then it's time
to release. Yeah.
Cause that's also, I mean, I see that a lot of times. I see my friends and I see, you know, people that I'm a fan of, but they do release an album and I'm like, it's a little soon for that. I just feel like why are you going to do that when you can just still have the same amount of songs, but just release it over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have content for an entire year rather than just this one album release.
Exactly. I mean, I could make an argument. It's like, should you be releasing one song a month for 12 months or 12 songs all at once? Well, in 2018, it's probably easier to build a brand with one song a month.
Yeah. Because then too, I mean, at the end of the year, you could release it as like a vinyl release or something like that. And then have it be you could still have it be an album. And it can still act as an album once the year's up.
Yep.
But you still kind of take advantage of that sort of that drip feed of content, you know? So what do you think about like, putting out like videos and things like that, like maybe like vlogs and things like that?
I think it's great. I think, a lot of the biggest artists today really have a great handle on social media. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
And I think there's certain types of content that work better for different social medias. Like video seems to be the only thing that travels on Facebook these days.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, you know, 142 characters of text travels well on Twitter, whereas static images travel well on Instagram.
Right.
So just making sure you're putting your content in the right place.
Right.
But I think, you know, the brand, the social media content, it's all part of it.
Yeah.
It's an important part of the, you know, it's an important part of the development of an artist brand.
Yeah. What do you think? Because this kind of reminds me of the Drake hopping on Fortnite. Did you see that?
I did.
Or did you?
I did saw that. I saw it on social media after.
Okay. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty nuts thing to happen. It kind of
I don't
came out
play
of nowhere.
Fortnite.
Okay.
So
I don't either.
I can't really speak to it, but it's smart. I mean, he tapped into a whole new audience, right? Wasn't on Twitch or something that he did. So it's brilliant. It's like, I'm sure you got a ton of gaming fans that day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I played Fortnite the next day.
Yeah.
Or a couple days later than that. So it was because I was like, oh, I should probably try this game. If it's good enough for Drizzy, it's good enough for me. You know, how do you feel about Twitch? What do you think about it?
I used to be a gamer, I would say, in high school.
Yeah.
That was before Twitch.
Yeah.
And I'd say in college, I kind of stopped gaming.
Yeah.
Now I don't even have a Xbox or anything in my apartment, so I really just don't game anymore. Yeah. But it's fascinating to me that people can amass, you know, millions of followers on a platform like Twitch by just playing video games, and people will tune into that. It's just, every year there's new social medias and new ways to connect with people.
Yeah.
So it's just part of that progression. And I really, I think it's great. You know, I think it's, it could be a useful tool for artists.
For more so like live streaming in general. What do you think is an effective way to use live streaming?
It probably varies depending on what kind of artist you are.
Yeah.
I see a lot of, I was at a live stream event last night, actually.
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland had an album release party, and she live streamed it onto YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. A lot of these social media channels are prioritizing like the live feeds on their channels as opposed to just uploaded content.
Well, like Instagram Live is like right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
the same with Facebook Live. You get a notification. Yeah. They're really trying to push that. So I think it can be a great way to spike your engagement.
Yeah.
And look, I think with Instagram Live or Facebook Live, the fans, a lot of fans don't necessarily want to see your edited, glossy festival recap.
Right.
They would prefer to just hang out with you in the car on your way to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And so that stuff's great for that. And you know, every year there's like new features on these different social media platforms and new ways to engage with people. I think the best artists stay ahead of that curve and they're always on the forefront. You know, I'll see like GIFs pop up on Instagram. I'm like, I got to update Instagram now because now you can put dancing cats on your story.
Yeah.
You know, and where do I learn about that? From like Diplo's account.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's very forward.
Like they're super, super on top of it.
Yep.
I think one of the cooler things as far as Instagram Live is like that you can have somebody else join your live stream and like you can have two accounts having the same live stream. So it's almost like you can have, like, say if you had an artist and then you have a featured singer or something like that, they could be in the studio session and they're both streaming it together and they're kind of taking advantage of that, almost like the Drake Fortnite thing. Like they're getting that cross pollination of fans, you know?
Absolutely.
It's a pretty cool thing. Definitely. When do you think, things took off for Louis the Child?
It's hard to point to one specific event, but if I had to point to just one, I would say when they released It's Strange.
Okay.
Their collab with K-Flay.
Uh-huh.
That seemed to be the song that kind of took on a life of its own. I think it's our biggest stream song on Spotify to date.
Yeah.
We had it, that one was synced in a FIFA soccer game, like FIFA 16.
Uh-huh.
And that opened the doors to a lot of music festivals wanting to book us.
Yeah.
And just, that was huge. That was it felt like a clear, you know, turning page of, okay, we were putting out free remixes on SoundCloud. Now we have It Strange, and it's kind of the turning point into making original music and playing festivals and all that.
Yeah. That was like that was a song that kind of introduced me to them. I didn't really hear about them that song.
Sure. Taylor Swift, posted, I don't know if she's done this twice, but she wrote out like 10 songs that'll make your life more awesome. In a book, and then took a picture of it, posted it to Instagram.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Then, like, the song went viral, and it was awesome. So, thank you, Taylor Swift,
for the shout out.
The shout out.
Yeah. What was engaging and, like, taking on Wheat Thin as a client like?
So, Wheat Thin's another guy from Chicago.
Uh huh.
Wheat Thin's so I work with a co-manager on Wheat Thin.
Uh-huh.
I'm Dan. Dan sent me his demos really early on, and we were just talking about it, and we were friends and colleagues. And you know, he's like, I got this great guy, but he's really young and from Chicago. Do you want to work on this with me? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So that was, you know, again, it was just really, he is an incredible producer, such a talented guy, and the music was just mind-blowing and sounded so big that I was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah,
this is gonna be huge.
Yeah.
And he's had a great 2018, put out a record with Dua Lipa, and his last single was with Broods. He's awesome music in the pipeline for the rest of the year.
That's great. What is your what's your manager's bucket list? So like, what are sort of the goals that you have as like in your career, like when you're, you know, 65 and you're looking back, like what are the things that you want to have seen done.
Accomplish.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at this point in my career, I would love to have mainstream radio success.
Okay.
You know, have a record in the Billboard.
Yeah.
Top 100. Those are things I'm constantly chasing.
Yeah.
Those gold and platinum records. Manager's bucket list. So we've played, I've had clients who've played a lot of music festivals, so I feel like we've crossed that off. That's been a big goal, but now the goals always change. You know, you're always constantly trying to push it forward and get bigger. So now it's kind of get onto the main stage, headline a festival, sell a million records.
Yeah.
Those are the new goals, but I try not to, you know, set a goal and say, I have to do this or else.
By this time, it has to be done, that kind of stuff.
I try to look at like a 6-month plan, 1-year plan, 2-year plan. Do we want to do singles and EP albums? What are the touring plans? Yeah. Just kind of look at it in those.
Like, you know,
what are we doing? And what are we doing this week? What are we doing this month? What are we doing in 6 months?
Right.
And make sure that you're telling a story and building and constantly moving forward.
Okay.
And going upward, not. Yeah. You know, I think the biggest mistake some artists can make is not putting out music for too long.
Right.
It's you look at how many albums like the Migos guys put out, how many projects. It's insane. It's no wonder they're on top because they're constantly releasing music.
Yeah.
There's always content coming out.
Yeah. And then too, the way that I look at it as well is like the more music that you're putting out, the more opportunities you have to make a connection and to have something click, like that K-Flay song, you know, and like to actually have things like take off.
Absolutely. And you know, and the internet, you know, if a song doesn't work out, it's not gonna ruin your career.
Right.
People just don't listen to
that
song. They're
not gonna pay
much
attention to it.
So I think you're better off just putting out 5 songs and hoping that one of them really catches fire, as opposed to putting out that one perfect song. Because oftentimes in my career, like a lot of times the record that went the biggest was unexpected. You know, you're so focused that this is going to be the biggest song to date. This is going to be the biggest smash. And it just doesn't react.
Right.
You know, and then this other song that you thought would for sure be a B-side and a dud has this big reaction.
Yeah.
So that's,
you just got to keep pushing it. You got to keep going.
Keep throwing darts at the dartboard. And
yeah.
Occasionally you hit a bullseye.
One of them will click for sure. What are some other mistakes that you see young artists make as well?
I always, you know, strive to be the guy that, you know, is that people want to work with, you know, just being polite and professional and easy to work with. I see sometimes young artists or young industry professionals can think it's their job to be very difficult. And there's a lot of nice guys in the music business who are very successful.
Yeah.
So I would say just, you know, even if you're an artist, like professionalism and being polite and humble and hospitable are very important. You know what I mean? It's critical for any business in America, not just the music business.
Yeah. I feel you there. Because I feel like, too, like the music business, I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but the music business is getting, it's so saturated, and I feel like there just isn't really room for assholes anymore. Like, if you're going to be a dick, you're just going to end up having, people are just not going to work with you because there's going to be somebody else who's more talented and more driven and nicer that are just, is going to get your spot. So like, you have to be as nice as possible and as giving and as grateful. And
yeah, there's so many music industry rock stars that are just so nice and polite.
Yeah.
And success, in my experience, is never a barometer of, you know, how nice someone is never like a barometer of success. I've seen, I've seen very successful people be very nice, and then people who aren't as successful are the opposite.
Right.
So yeah, just be polite and kind to everybody. I think it comes back around for sure.
Definitely. You just started your new, your management company.
A new management company.
Yep. So you had Prospect Artists was my first company. Okay. And then were you just with Prospect when you started this new company, or what's the...
Yeah, so Prospect was... I mean, I was sole proprietor of Prospect. Okay. I owned 100% of Prospect.
Yeah.
Matt worked with me there. But, you know, I wanted to kind of try to build a bigger company. And,
okay.
And, yeah, so I have a business partner now, Peter yeah. Rugo, uh-huh. who was formerly at Roar Management.
Okay.
He was at a big management firm here in town. And,
yeah.
And he left, and then we started Keel in February of this year.
How do you spell that?
K-E-E-L.
Okay.
The website is keel.la, K-E-E-L.la.
Cool. Very cool. So what drove that decision?
It was really, I just wanted to have more like-minded people
okay.
in the office.
Maybe build something. Did you want to build something that was like kind of bigger?
It was really about just maintaining, because I was presented with opportunities to join other management companies, uh-huh. other bigger firms.
Yeah.
And this seemed like a better fit for me in right. terms of I was still building a bigger company,
yeah.
but staying, you know, an entrepreneur, being my own boss,
yeah.
et cetera. It was just a better fit for me. You know, a lot of people go to bigger companies and have tremendous success.
Yeah.
And that's great. For me personally, I just wanted to build my own company culture
yeah.
and my own operation.
That's great. So this kind of leads into the whole independence question. When do you think is a good time for an artist to sign a record deal?
That's a tough question. I mean, it depends where you're at, you know, because
yeah.
you can, there's successful artists who never sign record deals.
Yeah.
And then there's people who sign them very early, yeah. small amounts of money who turn into huge successes. And there's people who hold out till later and there's everything in between.
Yeah.
I would say it depends where you're at in your life and, right. and what you need. You know, some people need that advance check really, really bad to
yeah.
focus 100% on music and 100% on their art. Whereas other people can maybe afford to kind of hold out for longer.
Right.
And there's a third group of people who just stay independent forever and that works
They're
better
fine.
For them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's even more becoming more and more possible in the Spotify era of
yeah.
the music industry.
Where do you think what do you think the record label role is going to be like as, you know, I mean, streaming is absolutely dominating and I don't know how much mechanical.
To me, because I work with Lewis Child signed to Interscope, major
yeah.
record label, Wheaton signed to Atlantic, major
yeah.
record label. So I work with labels every day.
Okay.
I think major labels provide tremendous value.
Okay.
I'm not a manager who thinks that record labels are pointless and,
yeah.
you know, they're all going to come crashing yeah. down because they, you know, also is like a younger manager tapping into all the resources.
Right.
You talk about a major record label and there's a digital department and a creative
yeah,
department and
helpful.
A radio department
yeah.
and a publicity department. And there's all these, you know, amazing. It's like your team just grows
10x. Yeah.
Right. And so if you can, you know, appreciate that and learn to work with people, but it's, you have to know what you're getting into because it's a partnership. Like signing to a record label, I've always seen as, you know, is bringing a new business partner to the table. It's not, you know, it's not the manager's job to just bang their hands on the table and demand
right.
everything. And it's a two-way street. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, and that's how I think the best way to work with them is see each other as business partners, not
right.
as someone works for the other person.
Okay. You were talking about, you know, all the different tools that a record label offers you. What do you think is something that you have found to be indispensable? Like something that's like, that they bring to the table that is worth the most worthwhile? Like what is something that like a record label can offer that is like basically like, this is why you should sign. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what you're going to get.
Sure. I mean, you know, there's like the elevator pitch that they sell you on, which includes one, all like the marketing services
uh-huh.
I talked about. And then also the A&R department, just their Rolodex,
right.
you know, their instant access to everyone else signed
yeah.
on their label. But it just, it depends what you're going for.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think they can be, labels can be great business partners and
yeah.
and all that. But really it's, you know, they sell you on being able to take your career to the next level.
Definitely.
And taking you from a band that no one's heard of to a household name.
Yeah.
That's a long, difficult journey. So. Yeah.
What's something to watch out for?
I think some, you know, it's an interesting time right now where there is money in recorded music again.
Right.
Right. So like when I was in college, our professors would go, just look at how declining the recorded music industry is. Like no one's buying stuff on iTunes. No one's buying CDs anymore. This is all, you know, going to shit.
Right.
Don't, you know, pick a different job.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now, with Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal, there is, I mean, there are billions of dollars in these streaming services, and you can be an independent artist and you get a, you know, a few million streams and you're well on your way to six figures, right? So I would just say know, you know, understand the value of a million streams.
Okay.
And like, what's the, how much money are you going to make from a million streams on Spotify?
That's,
it's all information that's out there. And then try to project what you're able to do and value your brand, you know, value what you're able to do. And maybe if the answer to that is, well, I can only really get 50,000 streams, which doesn't translate to a lot of money on Spotify.
Yeah.
Okay. Then maybe I need a label to get to a million streams.
But if
you can, but if you can already get to 10 million streams on Spotify, then value that and make sure that you're not selling the rights to your music for a bad price.
Right. And like really getting to know what the deal is you're signing and make sure you get people on your team that can read your contracts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And then also watch out for ancillary participation.
Okay.
Right. So there's, you know, 360 deals are very popular.
Right.
A record deal that also, you know, takes some of touring and merchandise and publishing. Right. I mean, that makes sense for some people.
Right.
Depends on the type of deal, but you should really understand what that means and all the different revenue streams that a label might be, may or may not be commissioning before entering into the deal.
Okay. So, you know, we talked about the social media stuff and just how streaming has become pretty popular and things like that. Is there anything new up on the horizon that you're interested in that maybe new revenue streams or new opportunities that some people may not know about?
I am a big advocate for a new music distribution service called stem.is.
Okay.
So Stem is, the skinny is, I'd like to say it's like TuneCore for 2018.
Uh-huh.
It's built on blockchain technology. And if you upload a song to Stem, it takes the place of TuneCore. It'll put your song on iTunes, Spotify. But if you upload a song to Stem, you can divide up, the percentages for, you know, as many people as you want to. If there's 20 collaborators on the song, you can say he gets 5% of the song, he gets 17% of the song, he gets 10% of the song. And then Stem, which is built on blockchain, will collect all the money from Spotify and iTunes and then distribute amongst the percentages that you entered in. So, and an account on a monthly basis, which is really amazing to have this like transparency and royalty accounting. I think it's something that's like long overdue for the music industry.
Yeah, I feel you there.
So it's just great that, you know, if you get together with your friends and you put a song on the internet, you know, even if you're an independent record label or an up and coming band, you might make great music and know how to market great music, but that doesn't necessarily translate to being a good accountant.
Right.
You know, and if you're an indie label and you're releasing 100 songs and there's 300 contributors, that's a lot of people to make sure are getting their checks. So Stem just makes sure everyone's paid and it, you know, you get a check from Stem once a month. So I'm a big advocate of that company and that technology because I think transparency and royalty accounting is so critical and long overdue. And, you know, it's 2018. We can see, you know, everything on our Apple Watch. Why can't I tell how much money my songs have made on Spotify? Why can't I see that in real time?
Yeah, as you should.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely think the transparency thing is the coolest thing. I think a lot of things are being a lot more transparent now, especially like...
Absolutely.
And I think that just is making for a better industry, and it's making for a much more honest industry. Yep. You know, the gatekeepers to the industry have shifted roles as like there isn't as much of a knowledge gap now. Like you can be an independent artist pretty relatively easily. Like it's still a lot of work, but as far as knowing the ins and outs of the industry and knowing the ins and outs of like what you're worth and like how many streams you're getting and how many fans you get in every single location, like I feel like that's like a lot easier now.
Sure.
You know, especially with you can, you know, see where your listeners are on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like absolutely. Locations. Yeah, the analytics are insane. I've always been like an analytics junkie.
Yeah.
Like SoundCloud would tell you where all your streams came from.
And yeah.
Now Spotify does that too, and it's really really great.
How do you feel about a mailing list? Do you use mailing lists?
We do. Yeah. I think just the more ways to get in touch with your fans, the better. I mean, it's good. You don't want to be annoying with your mailing list if right. you're emailing people every day. I think that's way too much.
Yeah.
You might get a lot of unsubscribes, but you know, email marketing, it's, someone told me, I don't know if, you know, this is all hearsay.
Yeah, definitely.
Not really sure, but they told me that that's like the best way for brands to, you know, sell products online is still through email marketing. Yeah. It's like the number one sales driver for a lot of big companies. And I think artists should be taking advantage of that too.
One of the things that I've heard, again, this is hearsay, but one of the things that I've heard is that if you have a mailing list that it's good and it's responsive and there are real people that are interested in mm-hmm. what you're talking about, you should be able to make $1 a month from every single person on that mailing list. Not
sure
getting $1 from every single person, but you know, sort of the 80-20 rule.
Like, and there's great tips and tricks. Like you can trade an email address for a download.
Yeah.
I think it's fair for both parties.
You know, I think that's great.
Give me your email address and I'll give you a free song.
Yeah.
There's so many awesome DIY tools and tricks, and like, you know, we were trading like a SoundCloud follow for a download in the early days of a lot of my clients, and all that stuff it's awesome. It's great that those tools are out there to help indie artists.
Yeah, definitely. Where do you think SoundCloud is going?
Well, I love SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Great company, great people. I always say that I probably wouldn't have a career in music if the SoundCloud platform didn't exist,
right.
because it allowed my clients to go direct to consumer without a label, without anyone, right? Super fast, get out to 100,000 people. I hear a lot of artists complaining about the demise of SoundCloud and all that. And really, I think it's, look, the company's been losing money year after year. They have to figure out how to break even or be profitable or we're going to see it shut down.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's dollars and cents. If you keep losing money year after year, you know,
it's just the way it goes.
I don't know how many investors you can keep convincing to support you. So, I think SoundCloud's great in terms of, you know, being that direct to consumer platform. And I hope that they develop like the SoundCloud Go, the paid tier out, because I want to see it stick around. I think it's, just like that retweet function on the platform is so unique and allows like networks of artists to support each other and get each other's music out.
Yeah, definitely.
SoundCloud reposts are a big part of my business.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like breaking songs on the internet.
Yeah. Cause like you get it in front of, we even had one of our podcasts had some reposts on it, and that like helped us out a ton.
Sure.
Cause like there's no other, I mean, you can't repost a podcast anywhere else besides SoundCloud.
Exactly.
You know?
Sure, you can't do that in the iTunes podcast store, right?
No, you can't do that on even like Spotify. Like the only way of true music discovery in Spotify is like by just sharing a link. You can't say like, hey, listen to this thing, or hey, listen to this
exactly.
thing. You can kind of have that with the playlists, which have kind of become the norm for music discovery, I think.
So I hope I hope they kind of right the ship and figure out how to make it work. And you know, and talking to some people over there, it sounds like they're laser focused on kind of super serving the producer creator community, which is awesome.
Definitely.
Great company. I probably wouldn't be a manager without SoundCloud.
Yeah. I mean, SoundCloud was like when I was first getting into music, because I started off by DJing, SoundCloud was like that was my bread and butter.
It's the jam. It still is. Important.
Wake up in the morning and check what's new on SoundCloud and see what I'm going to play that night.
Yep.
You know, this is awesome. I definitely liked sitting down with you. This
Great.
Was really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts?
I would just say to any aspiring music industry professionals out there, just get out and do it.
Just make it happen. It.
Yeah.
Just, definitely.
Just don't wait. I mean, I listened to this great podcast, How I Built This, and you know, this billionaire CEO.
Yeah.
So look, I think anyone can be successful in any industry. You don't need any experience in it. You just have to, you know, do everything with a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
You know, don't wait. Don't wait till tomorrow. Get it done today.
Yeah.
You know, send that email tonight. So
yeah.
Yeah. Get after it.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Joey.
Yeah. Thanks, Roman.
Yeah. So that's our show. If you want to keep up with all the Industry Talks news and find out when and where our next panel is taking place, check us out online at industrytalks.net. Thanks for listening.